Welcome to the Shoot the Breeze podcast with your host Vinny, Rob and Nello. This podcast contains strong language throughout. Listener discretion is advised.
All right. Hi, everybody, and welcome. We're back. The Shoot the Breeze podcast is back. Sorry. Welcome. I don't know what episode we're on, but we haven't, we've probably chatted individually, but not all three of us in, I don't know how long it's been. But sorry, we just kind of disappeared off the face of the earth, but a lot of stuff was going on individually, and so this kind of got put on the back burner, but we're back.
Yeah, we're episode 95.
Jesus, there you go.
Yeah.
So what's the crack?
Boys, the band back
it's been a while.
You played a fucking gig to thousands of people.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was weird. It was nerve-wracking. It was weird.
Yeah.
So for those that don't know, Ireland still like is the entertainment industry side of Ireland. Everything else is back open. Is there any other industry that's still closed down in Ireland?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, apart from the arts.
Yeah. Like,
so just plays, live gigs, all the sort of stuff. Museums, they're all open.
Mm-hmm.
Hairdressers, gyms, pubs, restaurants, they're all open. Everything else is open. And it was kind of like a part, but live gigs aren't, and art, like, or sorry, like theater isn't, like plays and all that stuff, and comedy gigs, all that sort of stuff isn't. So there's still around 35,000 people like that are kind of in full time employment in the arts and entertainment industry that are still not back to work. And we went up to Northern Ireland, which is about 90 minutes from Dublin city centre, and we got to play a gig to 4,500 people, and it was no butter. And pretty much half the people that were working there were all from the Republic. Half the audience, I think, was probably from the Republic as well, just going by what we were getting on social media. So yeah, it's just mental that, like, you drive, you cross the border, and not to say that COVID doesn't exist or whatever, but, like, they're just getting on with it, like, you know? And down south, it's still this massive fucking thing, like, you know, where it's just... And the hypocrisy of the whole thing was, like, that you look at, like, Croke Park over the past couple of weeks, and I know for, like, the football, All-Ireland semi-finals for the football, there was, like, 20,000 people in Croke Park. For the hurling final that was on the weekend, it was over 40,000 people there. Like, so you're kind of like, it's one rule for them and another rule for fucking us, like, you know? And
yeah,
it's just, we just kind of want to get put on this level playing field. Like, and they're just like, oh yeah, well, like the initial thing was, oh yeah, well, like, you know, there's not going to be all the intermingling with people before the game or after the game. And everybody's going to have assigned seating and they're all going to be away from each other and all this sort of stuff. My hole, like, Croke Park, for whatever reason, like, if you saw the pictures that I post on social media over the weekend and or on my stories and stuff like that, like, there is no social distancing going on in that stadium. The fans are packed in, and for whatever reason, they're not spread out like they said that they were going to do. They were all jammed into a couple of stands.
Yeah.
And the scenes around Croke Park before and after the game were mental, like, you know.
That's what Sarah's brother had a thing that's after going, I think, kind of viral, because he's a full-time musician, and he was he'd know the lads in the Artean band, and he said, like, he just had a thing up saying it's wonderful performance, but the fact that if that was an advertised gig of the Artean band playing, that they would have only been able to have 500 people in the venue. But because
I didn't see that online actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and because they were playing to 40,000, it was fine. So, like, because it was a gala match. Rob,
like, yeah, it's like, it's 200 people outside, and it's 50 people inside. It's not 500. It's like, it's 200 outside and 50 inside.
You can't
have more than 50 people inside the three arena that fits 14,500 people. You can't have more than 50. That is just like, there is no logical sense. All these venues can be fully seated and could have 50% capacities. Like,
but there's no leg to stand on now after the weekend. There's no leg to stand on. In terms of what it felt like for you guys. I'm assuming it felt fucking incredible to actually get up and be able to, or was there a bittersweetness to it that you were kind of playing and going, we could have done this and fucking, you know, we could have been doing this, you know, the next night or the night after in Dublin, you know, that way, like, did you just have a bit of that feeling where you got off stage and you were like, why the fuck aren't we doing this on Wednesday in Dublin, you know?
Yeah, no, it was all of the above, pretty much. Like, it was, there was 3 days of pre-production before the show, and we had like all of the band were there for 2 of the days, but the crew were all there for all three. So they got in the day before all of us, set everything up, went through all the gear, all that sort of stuff. Then we arrived on the second day, did a full day's rehearsal, and then the third day did another full day's rehearsal, and then the gear went up to Belfast. So that was all great. It was kind of like this kind of like the stuff that we would do before we started tour, but we had to do it because we haven't been. The last show that we did was 566 days ago. Like, you know,
yeah, I saw Dave saying that. Yeah, fucking hell.
So it was mental. So that's why we had to do kind of those many days kind of beforehand for one show. So the buzz about doing the show was incredible. The reaction, hearing the noise of people singing back, like, oh man, I got like choked up, like, and teary-eyed a couple of times during the gig because I just took out my in-ear monitors and just listened to the noise, and I haven't heard that noise in so long, and it was just it was emotional, like, you know, because you're just like, this is what I get to do, and it's such a great thing, but it's such a shame that I haven't been able to do it. And it's not that it's just the Irish government's fault, but like, because of everything that had been going on for the previous 18 months all around the world, like, you know, the touring has kind of been off the cards in most European countries anyway, like, you know, so it's not as if it's just an Irish thing, but like, at the same time, like you said, it's also like, I wish we were starting a couple of weeks tour, like, you know, and going around Europe or going around Ireland and all that sort of stuff. So it was kind of like, it was a bit of an anti-climax, and it was just kind of like, I definitely climaxed. The night was amazing. we gave it our all, and like, fucking, we went to town and we hammered it out, like, and it was brilliant. Yeah. And the reaction was great, and that was brilliant. But like, it was also like, God, I wish we were like going out now and we had like another 3 weeks of this, like, you know, because it's kind of such an infectious buzz that you get, you know, and it's just like, especially when we haven't had that for so long, it's just like, oh man, like, you know, that's the stuff that like you live and breathe for it, like, you know, and it's, it was amazing. It was brilliant.
Yeah, because we had, I remember I was talking to Dee recently, well, not recently, it's a while ago, but I was working with Dee. We had him on Your Lighting Engineer. We had him on a gig with us, like, and it was great crack and it was a buzz, but like, there was a part of me, I was just like, knowing how good he is at what he does, like, and we had him for fucking 3 days, and it took the production level of what we made in the board, gosh, over 3 days up to a new level. Yeah. And I was just like, I just want that guy to be able to fucking do what he's supposed to be doing, because he's that good at it and that talented. And like, the truth is like that for a lot of your crew as well. Like, all the lads are at the top of the game. Like, and I remember when we done that show in May, I think it was. And that's actually why we stopped recording, because I spent the next month and a half breaking my balls editing it. But, just seeing like people like that get a gig, and then understanding the fucking circumstances that had to happen in order for them to get a gig, I was just like, people like that. That was my first time actually seeing. Like, I know guys that are at work for crew, but it was my first time seeing it from the point of view. Like, I was directing, and I had hired Dee. Like, and I was like, these lads are too good at what they do to have 18 months of their career ripped out of them. You know, that kind of way. And it's just good now that there's actually some kind of back to, like, it's getting there, you know.
Yeah, well, it's like, we still, there's no date, like, you know, there's like, there's a lot of shit in the media today. We're recording this on the Monday, the 23rd. Like,
I heard it all over the radio today.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people like, and kind of this week is the entertainment industry is again trying to bring awareness to the fact that like our industry is still the last one. We're the first one to close, and we're still that we're the last one to open, and we're still not open. We still don't have a date of when. And the thing is, it doesn't really affect us because we don't have like shows planned or whatever. We've got shows planned toward for the end of the year, so hopefully they'll still be okay. But it's more so just about like the thousands of other small bands and singer-songwriters and theater like actors and comedians and all that stuff that like all of their livelihoods, like, you know, it's not so much about all the like the big guys, like, you know, that like have fucking like that, like us or The Script or U2 or Hosier or Dermot Kennedy or any of those lads. Like it's not about us and me talking about it. Like it's not like I'm not being like, oh, it's like, oh, feel sorry for me. I'm just being like,
no, it's just get the fucking thing going, you know.
I'm just trying to like use my voice to be like, look, this is bullshit. Like, you know, it's like it's ridiculous that like, and like James Vincent Morrow and Brezzy were like tweeting me yesterday after I put up that tweet about what was going on, and they were just agreeing with me. And like, it's those guys as well, like that, like we should be able to have shows and do things, like, you know, it's such a double standard, like, you know.
I don't know about obviously not on the music royalty side and all, but like it is a trickle down industry, like, you know, you like if you guys are playing in like in a park, if you guys are playing in St. Anne's or you guys are playing somewhere, the pubs around it, like, you know, there'd be the likes of Cover Lads going in banging out covers for an hour and a half before you guys play. It's like it is a trickle down.
Rob, like it's a 3 billion euro in, or is it billion or is it 3 billion euro industry a year worth to Ireland, like to the Irish Exchequer, like, you know, in terms of hotel rooms, in terms of flights in terms of like people's wages, in terms of tax, everything, like, you know, that's all, like it's a massive industry,
and
like,
it's what we're famous for around the world: storytelling and entertainment.
And like, and part of me is like, any kind of begrudgers or whatever that are kind of just being like, oh, like, you know, shut up, like, you know, it's grand or whatever, like this whole thing of like, you know, or get a real job or whatever, or any of that sort of stuff. I'm just, part of me is just like, I wish that I could just like block you off from anything creative and see how your life is.
Yeah.
Like, take away all your books, your TV shows, your movies, your music, your radio station. Take it all away from you and be like, right, how's your life now? Because all the people that make all that shit happen are the ones that are out of jobs.
Yeah.
You know?
You're dead right,
and
it's as well.
Just, and like, I'd love to be able to be like, all the people that are like being like, oh, well, like the GAA is different and all sort of stuff, and stop complaining about like gigs and all that. And I was like, right, okay, that's it. You can never go to any live performance again, be it a play, be it a recital of a poetry thing, be it a comedy show, be it a music show. Like, you can't go to any of that shit now because you don't support. And like, I wish that we could do that. Like, I had that power to be like, right, well, you think that like our industry doesn't matter. Like,
yeah, that's a really good perspective on it, because that is the reality of it, you know. They're like I said, like, I know, like, Sarah's brother put out that tweet and all the other day, like, and like that's it's as much, you know, I think people get caught up when they see people like that comment of, oh, you ever shut up, like, you get to fucking tour the world. It's like, look, circumstances had it that, you know, like there's elements, there's success levels, but there's also, like you're saying, there's also people who are putting on independent theater, there's also people who put on the Panto and the Gaiety every year, and that's their fucking bread and butter. And there's like, and it's not just like, and you guys are trying to bring as much light to that. Like, you see like bands like Wyvern Lingo and stuff that have had to, like, they're off in fucking Germany now playing smaller shows and stuff, where they're just like, we need to go and get gigs, because they are at a level where they have to fucking survive. Like, they're looking for music to survive. They're just like, all these bands. Yeah, and but if you guys just shut up and sit back and don't say anything, then you're only proving the point of what someone's saying, like, oh, look at you, would you ever shut up? Like, it's like, no, you have to say something for the next lad who's going to be in Coldliner, the next girl who's going to be in the next equivalent of the big band.
Exactly.
Like, if you don't say that, it's fucking pointless.
Yeah, you need to say, like, it's so narrow-minded, like, for people to kind of have that attitude, because I'm just like, it's not like, I'm not saying that, oh, feel sorry for me, like, and I'm sitting here on my nice house and all that sort of stuff, and like, that's not what I'm talking about, like, you know, like, we don't have any gigs planned anyway, like, We've got shows that have been rescheduled, but they're rescheduled for next year. That's fine. We don't have like, we're not the, like the band, the cover band or the wedding band that is literally not being able to get a fucking gig and that would normally be booked out fucking every single weekend. We're that's who we're talking about. We're talking about the cover band that's in a pub on a Friday and Saturday night, that's how they earn their few bob. Like, you know, that's who I'm talking about. That's who I'm trying to get back to work. It's not fucking me. You know, it's like I'm talking about the fucking the little guy, like, you know, and the people that are just starting out and that need every fucking gig that they can help, that they can get their hands on, like, because that's how they need to cut their teeth. Like, that's who I'm that's who I'm talking about. That's who I'm fighting for. That's why I'm being outspoken about it. It's not about me or fucking Vinny from Codeline or fucking whatever. Like, it's that I don't give a fuck about that. It's not me. It's about other people, because if we like go back 12 years ago, go back 14 years ago, if we couldn't do the gigs that we did starting out, like, you know, where we learnt the fucking ropes of the music industry in around the bars and small venues in Dublin, like, you know, that's what we need to do, you know, or go on tour in a fucking splitter van and go all around Ireland. If we didn't get to do any of that shit, like, you know, then we wouldn't be where we are today. Like, so we're basically robbing the next fucking U2 or the next fucking whoever, like, you know, by having our industry so shut down, like.
Yeah, and I just like, just to chime in here to something that Nello always says, you know, and it's something that I found was underrated until you actually said it to me, because I didn't think anybody our age done this. If you're listening to the podcast, we obviously love that you are listening to the podcast and we're glad to be back doing it and stuff like that. Email your fucking TD. You know, they have a job to do. Yes. Like, and I know it's falling on deaf ears, and you might think, just fucking email them and say, look, this is shit. This is, you know, like, why is one thing, like, we live in a democracy. Why is one thing allowed to have a certain aspect of, like, the GAA put a massive magnifying glass on it on the weekend, you know? Why is this? And just because then they have to say it. They, like, if enough people email them, enough people, they have to start speaking up and all. And that's, If we were to close that matter in this conversation, the way I would do it is just, if you listen to the podcast, find out who your fucking local TD is and just fucking email them and just say, look, I want to let my voice be heard. I think there's a bit of injustice going on here and it is a bit of bullshit. Like, and just speak about it. And instead of, you know, like, I need to do it myself, because we can tweet and we can share things and all. But if we don't actually, like, these are people that are elected and they're paid a good bit of fucking money to do their job, so they may as well start earning it, like, you know.
I'll do that tomorrow, Vin. I'll email all my TDs tomorrow anyway.
Yeah, I've done it already, and there's, go on to onto Epic. It's a Epic working group on just Google Epic working group.
Oh, they have, I've like done that one already. That's where... the one that blasted out to loads of them.
Yeah, Shane Dunn.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done that already.
Yeah, and if you want to go back and listen to the podcast that we did with Shane from Epic Working Group, and is also who also runs Independence Festival down in Mitchelstown in Cork, we had him on the podcast there. Was it last year? We'll put the episode number up there as well, so you can listen to it. But basically, Epic Working Group are basically like, they've given the government plans and they have laid out like, in detail how they could put on shows much like, and ran much better organized than what the GAA, like, there was no contact tracing with GAA, there was no like requirement for vaccination or proof of negative tests to attend the GAA match, none of all these safety measures were in place for the GAA. All of these would be in place for a gig.
Electric Picnic said they would only have vaccinated people at the entire festival.
And it would be
testing on the way in.
They'd have email addresses, phone numbers, names of every single person that's attending, unlike the GAA, which isn't. And what went on in Croke Park yesterday was just, it's bullshit. Like, the fact that there was no need to prove if you were vaccinated or not, whatever, if you like had COVID in the past 2 weeks or not, if you were actually like had COVID then. Like, no social distancing. Now, I'm not saying that gigs have social distancing, but all the other things, no contact tracing, no nothing, like, you know, so it's just,
Even that Gavin James gig that they had, where they had everybody in the little tents.
That was just a photo op, like, you know.
Yeah, that was because just, nothing ever came. But like, did they do anything with the data from that, or did they say, "Oh well, actually, we can have bigger ones of this"?
No, they didn't fucking do anything.
They've basically done, like, I think they've done like 10 shows, because I think they've done some in the INEC in Killarney. But again, like, it's all super small capacities. Everybody's social distance. So you're not going to learn anything from that. Like, you know, you know, we need to be having like, and that was it. So they had like one test event with James Vincent Camaro, which was 500 people in the Ivy Gardens. And then they had 3,000 people, I think, at, or was it 1,500 at the Gavin James thing in Kilmainham.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's the last of the big scale ones.
That's
where, so like, you would have thought the next step would have been, right, let's have 1,000 people not socially distanced, like, you know, like reduce capacity down, and then like, but they didn't do that. Like, they haven't done that. It's basically, that was the last thing, and then it was like, oh, that's great, we did that, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
And then nothing.
And there is like, there is venues that I remember we ran our gig in the Bord Gáis, and I remember talking to the head tech guy there. And he was even saying, he was like, all these test events for outdoor, he's like, indoor can't survive unless we can book 75%, 85% of the house, you know? So he was kind of saying, unless we have the opportunity to try test that kind of stuff, then indoor is so fucking far behind outdoor at that stage. Like, because he's like, that's what they need to survive. They need to sell 80% capacity just to... That's, everyone gets paid at 80% capacity. There's not even a profit involved in that. Like, that's for it. That's for somewhere like the Bord Gáis, like, which would be one of like Ireland's primary theater kind of spaces, I guess, you know? So like, just like in terms of a roadmap, like that's how far behind, because like judging on what we're seeing at the moment, like the idea of the Bord Gáis being at capacity is a very, very long way away. Well, at least it seems like that to me, looking from the outside, looking in, you know?
It's frustrating. Like, you know, it's really it's just narrow minded.
I think there will be repercussions for it, because I think it is becoming such a fucking big story that I do think there'll be, you know, if voting comes along, there will, like, people won't forget, and like the young people came out and voted in force last time in the election, and this is the kind of shit that young people give a fuck about. So I can see it. You know, it, like, it may have repercussions, you know. And given where I live now, in my where I'm living, I got the funniest letter in the door a few weeks ago. Remember there was an election on out this way for a seat that was remaining or something. There was like a seat that someone vacated, that arsehole was the Minister for Housing. Vacated, and that was up basically out here. And Fine Gael had sent around these, what were, I'm doing quotation marks, handwritten letters from Leo. And I wish I took a photo of this, and I didn't, and it got thrown out, and I'm devastated, because I wanted to send it to fucking someone. But it was like this really desperate plea for a vote.
Yeah.
Like a real, like, if you don't give us your vote, like, imagine the bad things that are going to happen. And it was the first time, like, I know, like, at the moment, this place we're living in, was it the same price as living closer to town? Or like, so we just made a decision that we were like, it's a nice area, you may as well get it. And now I feel like this weird, like when I start seeing shit like that, I was like, the fear that the political parties have right now of losing one seat, like the fear that was in that letter. So like, when votes come around, get out and fucking vote, make your voice heard, get in touch with TD, because there is a bit of fear in the parties that, I'm not saying who to vote for, but there is that little bit of fear in the elite parties where it's like they're hearing the people, but they're not transferring it into what they're going to do for people. They're just transferring it into playing with their old constituencies that you don't want them people getting into power, you know? So it's like, there's definitely a bit of fear in the parties. So I'd say if there is an election soon, or if that does end up happening, that people should really get out and make their voice heard, because there is a palpable kind of like panic. But unfortunately, they're not fucking doing anything in a good way about it, you know. They're not trying to actively solve problems. And I understand we have a pandemic, but at the same time, just even listen to Epic Work Group and give us a fucking road plan or something.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. But it's annoying. Anyway, right, let's move on.
I thought we'd get Nello's complaint corner, but I think Vin has taken that mantle.
Mine's yeah, sorry. The exact same as that. So don't worry about it.
So what's everybody been up to? See fucking Shane Lowry's amazing round of fucking 62 on the weekend. Holy shit.
I know. I was watching it before I came onto this call.
Yeah.
Where is this being played? Is this in where is
New
this
Jersey?
Oh.
Yeah.
New Jersey. Where is he placed then? Or where is he in the rankings?
He's currently fourth. Or no, he's fifth.
Yeah.
He has about 8 holes left to play.
Oh, so can he win it?
He's 3 shots off the lead.
I'm going to have to throw it on after this. Lads, you'd be really proud of me. I start watching Drive to Survive.
Oh, good man. It only took you how long? Like,
I chucked it on. I'm guilty. I start watching the most current season because I know a lot of shit like from hearing you guys talking about it this season. So I wanted to kind of get up to speed. And now I'm actually fucking buzzing for... So the Formula 1 season is over, is it?
No. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Is it?
No, sorry, it's on their summer break.
Oh, is it? So there won't be another Drive to Survive for like another fucking, what, like 6 months or something?
Yeah,
well, they wait till the end of the season, or they release it just before the next season starts. Like, so it'll be like February next year before the new season.
But I want to start watching the F1 now because it's a very effective marketing tool. I'll give them that. It's incredible.
Massively effective.
And it's incredible because like the viewing numbers and stuff like that, it really has brought on a whole new audience for F1, which is amazing. Like, you know, it's brought people that really don't have or never had any interest in motorsport never had interest in Formula One even, like, you know, just because you see all the drama that kind of goes on and people love all that stuff and the insight that they get and the access that they have like to all the teams
it's incredible fucking television I kept the whole time I was watching I was like, how do you get a job doing any job? Now that I've seen that there's all these jobs that exist in my industry, I'm like, how do I get my job but in that show? Because I'd even do that.
Yeah, man.
You know, it's
like,
just
what a fucking, like, it's a touring circus, but it's like a really high end circus.
It's insane. And I see that they kind of have a bit of paranoia about when Netflix are around and stuff. The drivers are a bit like, Netflix are here, like, which is kind of funny. But,
you know, that's because the drivers are on stupid money regardless. It's the teams that want Netflix around.
I checked out the money, right? And in comparison to high-end sports leagues in the world, like the lower-end drivers aren't on as much money as you would think they're on. You know, I think the lower-end drivers are, some of them are on a couple, like 800, 900 grand a year or a million or 2 million. Think about it in comparison, right? Like 14 people or 20 people in the world are qualified to do that at that level.
In a
sport that costs much more, like costs a team like $100 million to run a fucking, or how much it costs to run a fucking F1 team. I don't know how much it costs to run an F1 team for a year. But you would think like the lower end players, say in the NBA, for example, are on $7-8 million a year and they'd be a bit par player at the end of a bench. Like,
yeah.
And you're thinking like this lad goes out every fucking couple of weeks, puts his life on the line, literally. And you just assume, I assumed, like, I knew Lewis would be like, you know, the 30s or 40s, but I thought the lower end, I didn't think the drop off would be down to 1 and 2 million at the lower end of the grid. Like,
is that what Hamilton's on in the 40s? Is it
30 million? I think
he earns a lot of money with sponsorship. Now, they're all sponsored by Hublot or fucking.
Oh, look,
that's team sponsorships, and as part of the sponsorship deal, they've got access to the drivers, like, you know. So, unless they have sponsorships outside of nothing, like
a sticker, I'm sure Monster like have registered drivers and stuff, you know. I know Lewis is a Monster driver as well as being, I know his team are sponsored by Monster, but I think that kind of that's more and more hand in, like Hugo Boss make their uniforms essentially like Hugo yeah. Boss are like, but that's a Lewis Hamilton effect, like, because he's a Hugo Boss ambassador and stuff. So I imagine
when he brings, but it's the same thing with certain drivers. Certain drivers have got outside sponsors, but then they'll follow, like, that they're like, yeah, okay, so like, yeah, like Carlos Sainz has a thing with Estrella, and yeah. Estrella now have sponsor, no, are they still with McLaren, or is Estrella now, I think, might sponsor something, have a bit of sponsorship with Ferrari and stuff like that. So it's kind of like, yeah, they have certain deals, but then the company then will go with the driver, but they will also then invest in whatever company that, or whatever manufacturer that they race for. Well, I never actually really thought about the whole drop off of the wage. I would just always assume that it's like the wage is kind of dependent on the budget of the team, and like Williams have as big of a budget as what Ferrari or Red Bull or Mercedes have, so it would just go that, like, yeah, their drivers don't get paid as much because the team isn't as big, like, you know,
it definitely logically checks out, but I was just thinking when I was watching it here one night, and I was like, oh, fucking check that out, like, and I saw like lower end drivers, but then again, you're saying, like, you know, if a team has less money, then they have less money, you can't do much
but you could also then say that, like, I'd say the drop off between F1 and F2 is massive.
Oh, monster.
Because, like, you know, so for like a lot, for like, let's say, like, George Russell or Nicholas Latifi, who drive for Williams, I'd say if they were at an F2 team, they might be on $100,000 maybe, or $200,000 a year, maybe even. But then all of a sudden, when they step up to Formula One, they go to like 800 to 1 million, like, you know, so that is a massive jump for them, obviously.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no, totally. And then if you can then climb the ranks, then you can earn more money. It was just a side note. And I saw as well, one of the, your man is getting investigated for insider trading. Toto Wolff.
He's an interesting character. Like, I watched a video on like how he became so fucking wealthy and how he became such a big player in Formula One. And now I can't remember a fucking thing of it. But like,
he was definitely just charming. I reckon he's charming. He's a charming man. He's a handsome, charming man. I reckon he just done that his whole
life. Just like got like fucking. But he owns a part of the Aston Martin team now, and he has a part of Mercedes as well. Like, and then he has a management company that he looks after certain drivers with as well. And yeah, he's just it's amazing. Like, he's a fucking he's a boss. You know, he's such a, if there was ever going to be like a new head of Formula One, like, you know, if he decides to retire from Mercedes, it's him, like, you know,
or not go to jail.
If this whole thing now doesn't blow up, and just as everybody's, because I think they're coming back for their summer break now, I think in a couple of weeks, I think it's another week or two.
I think they're
off their summer break. Like, so just as all this kicks off, it just kicks off now, like, you know.
Yeah, and I'm finally settling into having weekends off after 10 years of not having it off. So I'm maybe I can see myself dedicating a bit of my Sunday now to watching a bit of F1 and seeing what the buzz is of watching it live. But so as we have returned from the fucking deserts of non-podcasting, we are back in business. We are, however, running low on time, and we have to wrap this one up.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I think we might even try and do one in person, because we can meet up now, like, you know.
That'd be so lovely.
That'd be delightful.
So maybe we can start getting back on that train as well, and meeting up once a week for an LCN wag, you know.
Yes.
Enjoy it more when it's in person.
Totally. Guys, don't worry, I'll make the trip. It's grand. You don't have to come here, and I'll make the trip. Sorry.
Fucking am I am you going over there?
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck that.
Get the helicopter. It'll be grand.
Yeah. Yeah. Scramble, all right, gents. Yeah, it'd be all right. Like, thank you everybody for stopping by and checking out this week's episode of the Shoot the Breeze podcast. And sorry we've been away, but we're back now. And hope you enjoyed this week's podcast, and we'll chat to you next week. So stay safe and look after yourselves.
Awesome.
Cheers.
Bye bye. And email your TDs. Peace.
Yeah.